Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode, this very episode, we're going to talk about villains. Are they really so bad? No, we're going to talk about villains that need their own franchises. Speaking of, we're also going to have a Venom spoiler cast at the very end of the show. And also, we're going to talk about James Gunn getting another shot. Are good movies also fun movies? What's the difference there? And a whole lot more. So without further ado, let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow host, Johnny Davenport.
Hey, Aaron. How are you doing today?
I'll let you know shortly. And Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello, fellas.
Hello, hello. You're going to keep doing that. Don't add the fellas thing.
Why not?
That's just
dudes? That's, guys?
It feels like it's being gender specific, and we don't do that anymore. That gets you kicked off the internet.
You guys are... Do you not disclose your gender? Are you not specified?
I'm not sure yet.
Okay.
Binary transsexual.
I don't even think that's how the phrase works.
I don't think that's how that works, but good job offending at least three people. All right, we're going to jump right into it this week because we got some cool stuff to talk about. First up, just as a mention, because I'm a big fan, it's going to lead to something else, but Chris Evans is teaming up with The Last Jedi director Rian Johnson and Daniel Craig for his next project. It's a modern murder mystery. That's really all we know about it. But this comes on the cusp of the news that he is officially done with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, as he just filmed his final scenes for Avengers 4. Not much to talk about. Just wanted to give a nod and say thank you for knocking that one out of the park, Chris. Anybody that disagrees, go to hell.
Moment of silence.
Thank you, Captain.
Oh, Cap. Cap. I would argue I like him more than I like Tony Stark.
I would say the same.
I would concur.
Ooh. You know, everybody else is yelling at the screen. Hey, God, not Robert Downey Jr. He's a man.
He has so much heart.
Agreed. Oh, yeah. Also on the Marvel just got dick punched train, James Gunn is heading on over to DC to write and possibly direct the next Suicide Squad sequel. Now being Gunn doesn't mean anything bad anymore.
Bum, 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 bum.
How you feeling, guys? Come on.
Guys? Oh, now we can say guys.
Oh, Jesus. It's going to be like one of those
names. It's the gender non-specific guys.
Well, so is mine.
What do you guys feel about James Gunn? I don't want to get gunned on the gun topic.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
I'm personally excited to see what he does with the property. I'm a little disappointed that it's going to be... It's people are going to already start calling it, oh, he's just going to do what he did for Guardians of the Galaxy, which, duh. I mean, it's...
Who cares?
Who cares?
I liked it. I mean, if you like those movies, then what's the problem?
Yeah, I don't see the problem in that. I'm actually enjoying the fact that there's people out there in the world whose tiny little Marvel brains are exploding over the fact that they don't know how to love two things.
Yep. I have seen, and obviously it's a vocal minority. It's not a large group, but I've seen a lot, not a lot. I've seen a lot of the same people that hate DC, but love Marvel and James Gunn and have been, you know, just hammering for Gunn to get back to Guardians 3 because he was kicked off because of his bad tweets or whatever. And now that he's going to DC, they don't know what to do, John. What do they do with all that anger and love? Put it together, make a little care package. That's what I say. It's all good news, right?
I've been saying this from the beginning. DC and Marvel doing well, both of them, is perfectly okay. And everybody should just learn to appreciate it because the clock may be ticking on our comic book appreciation of movies. So when that clock ends, we're going to be sitting here going, why didn't we love it more while we had it?
Yeah, I'm excited to see him put some of his magic touches to the DC universe.
Put some stank on it?
Yeah, sure. I think that Suicide Squad is a good one to start with, too. I wouldn't want him entering in with anything serious like a Batman movie or something.
What? You're out of your mind. I want that now.
I want to see how he's going to do with entering into something that's very jovial and humorous, but it has tones of darkness in it, like Suicide Squad has. But when it comes to Batman, that's a lot of dark, and I don't know if I have
you
to
don't
see
want
how
too
I,
many jokes.
Well, I have to see how I feel about him entering into this realm, because that is part of the beauty of having Marvel and DC, is that they're two different worlds that you can appreciate and love. And so I would like to keep them a little bit different, but I also am really appreciative of his work and how he approaches writing and directing. So I think that this could be a good step for DC, as long as he keeps in mind he's not doing Marvel properties anymore.
How he approaches everything in life except tweeting. That seems to be a problem.
And children.
Damn. I'm glad she said it. Wow. All right. But it's pretty cool. I mean, it's pretty, I don't know what they're going to, what are they going to do when it comes down to the whole tweet thing, when the movie comes out? It'll come up again, or you think it'll die down by then?
Oh, no, that's when the Marvel people who will start using it against the movie.
I certainly hope not. Let's all be fans of everything. Let's all love it all. I'm super happy. There's a lot of fans who are really upset that Venom did so well.
Yeah.
Especially fans raving about it. Because people, you know how this is. You guys know how this is, right? There's that small contingent of people that have their minds made up on movies long before they ever come out. And they love to bask in the glory of being correct on one or two of them. And Venom might not have done critically well. I gave it a positive score. But fans loved it. Fans are raving about it. I'm seeing a lot of fan-like and love about Venom.
Yeah, so. I'm seeing that as well. I've also seen the opposite of that, where people will, they, like you said, they already had their mind made up. They weren't interested in giving this
based
a great
on
review.
Previous posts and thoughts and tweets and
yeah, talk. Things like that. Yeah. And their response is to pick one thing out of the movie that they weren't a big fan of, that wasn't super stellar to them, and that's the reason why the whole movie is trash. Absolute trash. Like, the worst movie of the year. And it's like, that seems a little infallible. Like, that is not accurate. I mean, there's not to tell you your opinion, but it's one thing out of the whole movie.
I think some people want the Marvel rights to go back to Marvel, and it's just not going to happen ever. They're not giving
up. Sony is hanging on to those with both hands, teeth, and maybe some feet.
Mm-hmm. Now, maybe some other people's feet. They're cutting off feet so they can hold on to this. They would do it. All right, one thing John's been asking about forever is for a new iteration of the Dresden Files as a TV series. It was a short-lived series on Syfy, I believe, a little bit.
Yeah, it was on Syfy in 2007 is when it aired.
Whoa. Okay, easy there, Wikipedia. Well, now it's happening again, as Fox 21 TV studios have optioned the rights to make a new series. John, I don't know why, but this takes you from 6 to midnight. What is up with the Dresden Files? What
makes him very happy.
It makes him very happy. Makes you very excited. All right,
so to give everyone an idea, those who are uninitiated to what the Dresden Files are, you take a Mickey Spillane detective novel, so very noir detective novel. You throw in a little bit of elements from Harry Potter, some curse words, some snark, fairies, vampires, all kinds of werewolves, a talking skull, a practical Joker Sasquatch, and magic that doesn't always work as intended, and you get the Dresden Files. It's got a lot of character to it. It's got a lot of fun to it, and the character of Harry Blackstone Copperfield Dresden is just an interesting character to watch, because as the stories have progressed, so has his ability to power up. And you have to remember that even though the character himself, probably in the first book, we're looking at a guy who's in his 30s, is still very much a young wizard. So because Wizards gets to be, like, in this world, 300-400 years old. So it's interesting to see somebody like this and see the power creep. And there's a whole rich world to this that feels very much like our world. However, it's got small elements of magic to it.
Hmm. Well, I am sold.
Yeah,
what a
sounds
stellar
pretty cool.
Introduction.
I mean, that was a great book report you gave us, Steve. Nice job.
You're welcome.
I don't know who Steve is, but I just like that name. I just threw it out there. You're welcome.
Poor Steve. All the Steves everywhere.
Poor all Steves. Poor all Steves. No, it sounds pretty cool. I've seen a lot of fans getting really excited about this. I remember watching it because it had, wasn't it Paul Blackthorne from Arrow?
Was that? Yeah, name? It was Paul Blackthorne. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was in, and that show was okay, but I have a lot of friends that love these books, so they really wanted it done different. And it sounds like it could be a cool concept. Another concept, Chronicles of Narnia. Not Narnia.
Narnia.
Nards. Nards. Chronicle
Wolfman
Narnia
has Nards.
It sounds like a candy.
Oh, that's delicious. But the Chronicles of Narnia is coming back to Netflix. Of course it is. It's coming to Netflix because Netflix owns everything. What are they going to do with this? Because I know they're doing things a little different here.
Well, they haven't told us exactly how many there will be, just that there will be multiple productions. But Netflix has taken the seven fantasy novels that came out in 1950 with C.S. Lewis's The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe and turning them into new films. They, like I said, they haven't disclosed how many productions they will have, but the stepson of C.S. Lewis has actually noted that he feels this is the perfect medium for
his check cleared. Yeah.
Yeah.
This medium sure. is great.
Yeah,
I
yeah, exactly.
It. Yeah.
But there are still some criticisms. I think it sounds like an interesting idea. I feel like Netflix can take on pretty much anything at this point, and I honestly would give anything they take on a chance. But there are some criticisms and concerns that this might not maintain.
On the internet?
Yeah, what? Never!
Yeah!
That it might not hold the original Christian elements that the books did. So is that a concern for you guys, or would that push you away if they didn't?
Hallelujah. Sorry, I got Tyler Perry'd. No, I don't. It's fine. I actually read The Lion, Witch, the Wardrobe. There definitely are Christian undertones. The lion is a freaking Jesus replica. I think, why can't you serve both masters in that respect? Create a really cool fantasy series and also have allusions to religion of any kind. You know, it doesn't have to be Christianity.
Yeah, yeah.
And that would be respectful to everyone. There's no, it's 2018.
Yeah, we're still in 18.
Sometimes I debate that. And it's, I think it could be done. It should be done.
John?
I am going to respectfully disagree.
Oh, I love a good debate.
I like it when you get sassy.
Give me popcorn.
And the reason why is there's a certain heart to those stories that the that is comfortably nestled in Christianity. Can you take that out of there? Sure, you can. They can do it, and it's possible they'll work. I'm not going to tell you say it's not going to work, but then you're changing the essence of the story and to a respect. You're changing the creators of the original's vision and his views and all that, and it's all posthumous, I guess. I don't know. I feel like there's certain things that were being used as intended, and unless you're paying attention to it in the stories, which I rarely ever do, you don't notice it. So why even bother with it?
No, why not bother with it? Why? Okay, this bugs me. Why? I get that the modern era's religion isn't as popular as it used to be or whatever. I don't really care what the reasons are. You're either religious or you're an atheist or you're an agnostic. Whatever you are, you're totally fine with me. It's your choice. Don't care. Why is it a problem to have Christianity or a religion of any kind interjected if it's part of the story? I don't see a reason to take it out. There
That's
are plenty
I'm
of people. Well, there are plenty. There. All right. Touche. Nice one. There are plenty of people. He said, "That's what she said."
Oh, I thought he said,
"No,
that's what I said."
I said, "That's what I said."
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
My whole argument is, why take it out? It's part of the story. It's not hurting anybody. Unless you're really looking for those elements, you don't notice it. So what's the point of taking it out if you're going to take it out?
How do you disagree with me? Because I said you could leave it in and just make it more open. What's the difference?
I thought you said you wanted to take it out. You didn't.
No. Listening isn't it cool? You know what? It's a podcast. We don't listen. Amanda, are you just sitting there going, well, you guys are saying the same damn thing?
I really was. That's why I was so confused. I was like, wait, I was so excited for a debate.
I thought we were having a fight. This sucks.
Right. I dropped my popcorn.
I thought we were, you know what? I shouldn't have gone for a run before the show. That's what it is.
Now, let me ask you guys this.
We tell you this every time. Don't go for a run before the show.
If it were to still have religious undertones, but it wasn't specifically Christianity, would that still serve your purpose, or does it need to specifically be Christianity?
I think they can make it directly Christian for those that are recognizing it, but also leave it open enough that where other people of other religions can understand the philosophies. That's what I think.
Right.
There's no reason why that couldn't be done. And I see no reason why you wouldn't, because it is part of the original stories. You know what?
Right.
People always want to change that kind of stuff. But if you change a comic book character or their freaking cape or something like that, the internet loses their minds. But this, because, you know, it's a vocal minority, again, don't want religion in their entertainment. You know, I don't want to be preached to and everything else. Well, it's part of the source material. I don't know what to tell you. It's part of the source material. So don't watch it. It's that simple. You don't have to be lament it. Just don't watch it.
I would say that the vocals would be less minority.
Is that what we're calling them? The vocals?
Yeah. Those who are vocal about their opinions, specifically on these types of topics. I don't necessarily think that they're saying, I don't want Christianity represented. I think a lot of times the majority of them who are vocal about it are just saying they don't want any religion. Because a lot of people get mixed up in the Western culture specifically in thinking that Christianity is the only religion. When you say someone's religious, they automatically think Christianity. But they don't think about all of the other religions, and like Islam or Hindu or things like that, all of those religions, Buddhism, people don't think about those. So I feel like some people are just like, don't give me just one religion. If you're going to talk about religion, give me more than one religion, or just leave religion out of it. So just to play devil's advocate, because I don't really care either way, honestly. But I mean, I feel like that's one thing that gets mixed up, is that some people aren't necessarily saying, I don't want religion represented. They're just saying, I want something beyond just Christianity represented. Because it's all we see in the Western culture.
Those aren't the people I'm talking about. I'm talking about people that don't want religion. We'll see what they do with it. Either way that they go, I mean, somebody's going to say something.
Somebody's going to be mad. I do hope, in terms of the source material, that it sticks, you know, to that. I hope they still incorporate those elements.
You know what? I am a firm believer in source material, and I think it should apply no matter the source material. So if you're adapting from a book, unless you can find a way to capture the spirit and the thematic material, then you should honor the source material as best as you can.
Well, and a good film writer or screenwriter or director would be able to give those undertones without isolating the rest of the people who aren't.
That's what
with
I just
that.
Said.
I'm just saying that the,
John
it's
and I both
possible.
Said. Get on board. We're all on the same ship.
We're on the same ship. I've been on the board.
Why are we having the argument and agreeing at the same time?
I know this is the second debate we've had where we're all like, we agree, dang
this
it.
This is an agreement. Well, here, I want to talk about something that's less easy to talk about than religion. I keep seeing this on the internet where people say a movie of, and Venom is a prime example, but we've seen it with a ton of them. People are saying a movie is fun, but it's not good. And I joke about that myself quite a bit. I'm like, oh, not good, but it's, you know, it's fun. But to me, if you enjoy yourself, it's still considered good, I would think. But it seems more and more the internet doesn't want that kind of debate. They just say, hey, yeah, you know, it was fun, but, you know, it's stupid. Okay. So my question is, if you find a movie fun, you're personally, if you find a movie fun, doesn't that mean it's good to you, at least?
Yes. It is always the answer to that question is, if I find something fun and I enjoy it and I feel like I have to tell somebody about it, yes, it's good. I think it's good and I want to share it. However, sometimes you want to reset people's expectations and be like, but it's not good. So that way they don't go in thinking that they're about to watch something amazing and then feel like their time is wasted. It's a way to just reset expectations in my book. That's how I use it. That's how I do it. It's fun. It's great. It's a good time. You're going to love it. It's not good, though.
It's like when you're preparing for a date. I mean, and you're meeting them on Tinder. I mean, I'm at least a 6, but I'm not a 750. All right? Right. Prepare for a 6. Maybe a 5.5. Prepare.
You know, I'm only 3 inches and it hangs to the left. What, is that it? Oh, it can only go up from there.
I would concur with John, but I would also add, for me personally, I will say if I say a film is good, that means that looking at it from a film perspective, it is well crafted. Mm-hmm. There are good elements that make it a good film. But if I say it's a good movie, that just means that it's fun. And I enjoyed it. I had a good time with it. So I differentiate in those ways where I'll say, you know, it's a good movie, but it's not a great film, sort of. So, like, I will say Boondock Saints is my favorite movie, but would I say it's the best film? Absolutely not. I mean, sometimes I might. I don't know. We'll see.
I think you have said that, but.
You know, no, I say it's the best,
the greatest movie,
best
in the
movie.
World.
Yeah.
But film, I differentiate. I just differentiate between movie and film.
Yeah, I don't do that. It's
good is good to me.
if I love something, I am going to share it to everyone I can share it to. And at the same time, I'm going to reset their expectations as well, because I tend to oversell something, and or I think I oversell it, and I don't want to do any of that overselling things. I want people to go in because they think, well, he likes it, but he doesn't think it's good. You know what? He's crazy. It is good.
When do you oversell it there, Eeyore?
If it's got good art.
Okay. All right. Yeah, if it's got art, John's all over. He's like, hey.
This is pretty. Solid 8.
Pretty pictures.
It looks good. Did you see that hair?
The hair matters. Look, when I go to a movie, there are different expectations. Certain kinds of movies are definitely more Oscar bait, more dramatic fare, more a serious tone. But if a movie is meant to just be entertaining, like your Jurassic Worlds, your Pirates of the Caribbean, mm-hmm. your fill in the blank summer blockbuster here, whatever it is, if I'm having fun and I'm entertained, that's a good movie. I refuse to say that is not a good movie just because it's not aiming for Oscars. It's not gonna make a Best Picture run, because honestly, most of the movies that do, I don't think should be up for Best Picture. So who's to say? If you had a good time, you had a fun time, that was a good movie. That's all that matters. And Adventures of Ford Fairlane. Most people hate that movie. I think it's a good movie because I have a great time every time I watch it. Don't care what anybody thinks. You're wrong. It's a great movie.
It is a great movie. But it's not good. And also, Merida's hair is a feat of science, man. They had to rewrite software to make Merida's hair happen.
How'd you feel about Moana's hair? Because she had beautiful hair.
Whose hair?
Moana?
Moana.
Oh, Moana? Yeah, they used the software they had to rewrite for Merida's hair to make her hair.
You're really invested in
hair.
You
get hung up on some weird stuff, you know?
It's a technical feat to make her hair at the time they made her hair.
But, which makes it a great movie, obviously, because her hair technically flowed.
On a technical term, on every single front, it's a great story. A mom and a daughter, you know, learning to work together. It's a great movie, goddammit. It's not good, but it's great.
Referencing Brave, right?
It is good. Why would you say it's not good? It's good. We're going to move on to movie innuendo. This time, if you've never heard our movie innuendo, that's where our hosts come up. We choose prior to this episode, we choose two innocent lines from a movie, from any movie. And this week, I'll tell you what it is. And then we deliver them as if it was sexual innuendo. So it's movie innuendo. And then at the end, we'll vote on who did it the best. Now, listeners, we want to hear from you. So definitely go to our Facebook group or hit us up on Twitter, who you think nails the movie innuendo. But the topic this week, memorable lines or short monologue from a villain, and present it as sexual innuendo. Now, when you do it, identify the villain in the movie and then do your line.
Can a whole monologue really be sexy?
He can. I saw a couple I was thinking about where I was actually reading it in a dirty voice going, damn, that's hot. And then I remembered that they killed people at the end of it.
Yeah.
And it was kind of sad. All right. Who wants to go first? John? All right, John. I guess you volunteered.
All right. So my first one is Nurse Ratched.
Oh, you son of a bitch. All right. Well, that's going to affect my list. Okay. Nurse Ratched.
If Mr. McMurphy doesn't want to take the medication orally, I'm sure we can arrange that he can have it some other way. I don't think he'll like it that way.
All right.
Okay.
I think I could have delivered it better.
Yeah, probably. I got all kind of discombobulated on it.
That's fine. You or me, Amanda, you choose. I'll let you. Ladies, you know, guys.
Aaron.
Okay, I'm going. All right. So I'm going to pick Saruman from Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
Ready? I gave you the chance of aiding me willingly, but you elected the way of pain.
It's the way you say it. It's not even the line.
That's what innuendo means, girl. And you know, if you end every sentence with, if you know what I mean, it's sexual.
Yep, that's true.
Hey, can you hand me that glass? If you know what I mean. Exactly. All right, your turn.
I should tell you who it is first. The driver from the movie Drive. He has no name.
Oh, all right. Great movie.
You give me a time and a place. I give you a 5-minute window. Anything happens in that 5 minutes and I'm yours.
Okay, that works. Yeah, that works.
However,
are you writing a thesis? Go ahead, John.
No, please.
The driver in Drive is not a villain.
I would argue that he is.
Arguable. He's a bad guy.
I mean, he kills people. He's an anti-hero at best. But I don't think he's... I think he's not a villain.
He's the hero of that story.
Depends on the way you're looking at it. We see that...
Ryan
Gosling.
He does a lot of bad things. I would say he's a villain. I don't think he's a good guy. It's kind of like Nightcrawler. He's the hero of that story, but he ain't good.
Okay.
Are you trying to take away her line? Because
it was so good. He's like, I don't want it to win.
No, it's not that it was a good line or not. It's just that, follow the assignment.
Should we go to whole court?
John just tried to disqualify me.
listeners, weigh in. Is Ryan Gosling in Drive, just because he's a heartthrob, is he a villain? Anti-hero or hero?
We should really just be asking Brian Williams, co-founder, one of the hosts.
Yeah, no, that's cheating also, because he hates the movie, so that's cheating.
You know what, John? It's your turn. Come on. Bring it.
All right. Ed Rooney, how would you feel about another year of high school under my close, personal supervision?
Jeez.
You know what's really creepy about that?
Everything?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you look into what Jeffrey Jones is, how his life turned out, it's really creepy.
It gets creepier. Everything he does in that movie becomes creepier.
Yeah.
Mm. And every movie, actually. All right. I can't remember. Is it my turn?
It's your turn.
All right. Darth Vader. Yeah. Darth Vader. I sense a disturbance in the Force.
Really?
Shut up. Like in their pants. Get it?
It's not as funny when you have to explain it.
In your pants. Luke. Sorry.
Joker from The Dark Knight.
Mm.
Come on. I want you to do it. I want you to do it. Come on. Hit me. Hit me.
All right. That's.
Does that count?
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. All right. Who's the winner? Good.
Yes, it counts. What am I? Wait, unless you're going to try to use it later, like the hero of the story, Joker. What?
I had a backup if you were going to make me remove
Joaquin
Drive.
I mean, Joaquin Phoenix is actually,
Yeah. You pull a line from Joaquin's Phoenix movie right now.
Okay. You had a backup in case Drive backfired?
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Go ahead, Amanda. You've
heard. Wait, she had a backup in case it backfired.
We're all that supposed to have a backup, ready. Actually.
She knew exactly
read
what she was doing when she chose
format.
That. She was making Amanda rules.
Read the format, sir. You should have had a backup,
Amanda,
anyway.
Come on, bring it. Bring it. Quick.
Tom Riddle from Harry Potter.
Of course, a Harry Potter quote. I'm stunned.
I can make things move without touching them.
Yeah, so can I.
Is that the 3 inches that you were talking about earlier?
Hangs to the left. And
don't
forget
it hangs to the left, too.
John, vote. Who's the winner?
Me.
Okay. All right. Amanda, who you voting for?
He voted for himself, just in spite.
I'll go for Amanda. I like the Drive one.
Oh.
So
he even picked me because of the one you didn't like.
Yeah, because I think he's a villain. I don't think he's a nice
guy.
God,
it's his story.
That doesn't mean he's not the villain.
You know what? And I also
even, like in the music for the soundtrack, the music is all about him being a hero.
Yeah, that's how he sees it. The whole movie, he sees himself as a hero, but he's really not a hero.
If you do bad things, are you really a hero?
Snake Plissken, is he a hero?
He saves the president.
Does he?
But
though?
He kills a lot of people.
They were all bad. They were all bad.
They're all bad. All right, well, let's move. Amanda, who's your vote for you?
I'll vote for Aaron, so everybody gets a vote, John voted for himself.
I don't need none of that nonsense. All right, before we move on, I do want to say that we want to thank you to our Patreon supporters. You keep the show on the air, who donated graciously at patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. If you want to donate there, you can. And you can just give a buck, be nice, say thank you. $3, you get bad movie night every single month. You get a bad movie that we make fun of. Or if you go $5, you get the full bonus episode plus bad movie night plus everything else. And there's also other tiers.
There's a giveaway.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how much longer we're doing that, but we do a giveaway. You can get a Blu-ray. So I want to say thank you to our new Patreon supporters, Justina Shave or Shave, Shave, Shave.
Shavi.
Shavi. Ooh, I like that. That's hot. Tara QT and Michael Mitchell. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Michael Mitchell.
Michael Mitchell.
That's kind of fun to say. Michael Mitchell.
His initials are
That's, Campbell Soup.
That's in your right note right there.
Good. It's very alliterative. He's a superhero someplace.
All right. We've got one review. Our Venom review will be on our spoiler cast at the end. There is a short spoiler-free version of that. So if you want to hear that, you can hear it. We will let you know when spoilers are coming. Don't you worry. But there's another movie that's coming out. It's actually coming out later this month. But we've got some bonus or some special episodes coming up. So we're going to do it now. Thunder Road, Amanda.
So this is one that you actually saw, Aaron, and I believe you're the only one who saw it.
Show enough.
This film, which was written and directed by and starring Jim Cummings, is about a police officer who comes to grips with the death of his mom when giving a heartfelt eulogy at her funeral. Which is a weird synopsis, but very interesting. What made it so memorable or likable for you?
Yeah, I saw this at South by Southwest and also just saw it again to prepare for this. And there's an interview with the director, Jim Cummings. It should be coming out soon. I love this movie. I really did. The reason why I like it, and that description doesn't do it justice. The movie opens with 10 minutes, one shot of Jim Cummings at his mom's funeral having a nervous breakdown. He goes through every single emotion you could imagine, from laughter to jokes. Well, I guess that would also be laughter. Sadness, despair, embarrassment, humiliation, as he tries to just give this eulogy that he needs to give. And then from there, the movie turns into him wrestling with his mom's loss, as well as trying to be a father to his daughter. And he has a lot of problems with his relationship with his ex and whatnot, and trying to be a police officer, trying to be a good police officer. And he's just having a nervous breakdown and he's having a hard time dealing with it. The movie is funny. It is dramatic. It is heartfelt. And this Jim Cummings, a new actor, new director, new writer, new on the scene. And I was blown away by his performance so much that I turned to another critic when I saw it at South By and said, how have we not seen this guy before? Because he goes in and out of emotions quicker than anybody I've seen in a long time. It's a beautiful performance. I legitimately mean that. Beautiful performance for a very small, very independent movie.
Not to be confused with Winnie the Pooh, Jim Cummings.
Not Winnie the Pooh, Jim Cummings. No, different Jim Cummings.
But you mentioned how small the budget, it's such a small indie film. The budget was only about $250,000. Mm-hmm. Very small budget for this. How did it look? Did it look like a poorly made movie?
No, it looks like a movie. He did a great job. He directed, he wrote it, started.
He did everything.
He did everything. Like. And I'm telling you, there's more than one long shot, long one take scene. The eulogy is just how it opens, and it's based off a short, Thunder Road, which is based on a Bruce Springsteen song, which actually comes into play in the movie. You have to see it. I don't want to give that away. It's kind of a cool thing. And there's another one where he kind of loses it later on in the movie. And again, you know, it's like 5 minutes, maybe more, where it's just him losing his shit in the middle of a parking lot. And it's so well done. It's just so... Such an engaging performance.
Out of curiosity, when they do those...
And I've said that like three times, and I'm keep saying it.
With those singular shots, they're not doing any cutting or anything like that. Are they moving
at
all?
Yeah, the camera's moving. The camera's not static. It's actually moving around. So
it is still even more impressive because of that.
To me, yes. Especially when you see all the emotions he's running through in mm-hmm. both scenes, let alone the rest of the movie. Because there's a lot of laughs. It's not just – if you watch the trailer, it looks like a straight-up drama. It's not. There is a lot of funny stuff here. And there's also a lot of sad stuff. And I know if you lost a parent, I know John's lost his parent, it's hard to watch that kind of stuff. And maybe that's not for you because the whole movie is about coping with loss. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of laughs. I would hearken it to a – I don't want to say This Is Us because that's kind of cliche already, but it's very, there's heart, there's comedy, there's a lot of, just a lot of feeling when you leave, when it's all said and done.
Now you mentioned the release date. I do want to let people know the theatrical is October 12th in the USA and then video is October 26th. So if you guys want to check those out, but out of $10, if the full price of admission is $10, what would you give this one?
$8.50.
Ooh.
It is one of my favorite movies of the year so far.
Dang. Mm-hmm. Go Jim.
Yeah, go Jim. Jim and I felt really bad because when I'm doing the interview, you know, I try to be objective and just ask questions I want to know. You know, everybody has listened to my interview. You know how I interview. Mm-hmm. And half the time I'm swooning because I'm just so impressed with this guy's talent, you know, from this one movie. And I'm just sitting there going, you were so great. You were just great. You were like I just did for the review. It was the same way. I was fanboying out.
Wow. That doesn't happen very often.
No,
that's a nice compliment for him.
Guy deserves to be a shooting star. These are the kind of talents I like to see in the independent world.
So you're
going to
follow him then?
Yeah.
His work? Okay.
Yep. I mean, not literally follow him.
Hopefully not. There's stalking
really
laws.
I don't really want to get arrested over it. He's not that good looking. So, yeah.
Sorry, Jim, if you're listening.
No, you're a handsome fellow, but not stalker material. I'm not doing time for you. That's what I'm saying. That's how I base my stalking.
Oh, that's good.
Swing and a miss.
All right. What do we got coming out, John?
All right. So coming up first on October 12th, we have Bad Times at the El Royale, which if you keep on saying it and you're bilingual, when Spanish happens to the other one, kind of messes with you a little bit. However, seven strangers, each with a secret to bury, meet at a Lake Tahoe's El Royale, a rundown hotel with a dark past. Over the course of a fateful night, everyone will have a last shot of redemption before everything goes to hell. This is written and directed by Drew Goddard. This stars Dakota Johnson, Chris Hemsworth, John Hamm in his pants, Jeff Bridges, who seems like he's doing something other than Rooster Cogburn here, so good for him. Nick Offerman, and that's, I mean, there's more. There's a lot more. So then we have also on October 12th, First Man, a look at the life of astronaut Neil Armstrong and the legendary space mission that led him to become the first man on the moon on July 20th, 1969. This stars Claire Foy, Ryan Gosling, Pablo Schreiber, and Christopher Abbott. Then we have the movie nobody asked for, but somehow it still happened to be made. Halloween comes to, well, I'm sorry, it's also Goosebumps. See, I almost left out the title of Goosebumps 2. But Halloween comes to life in a comedy adventure based on R.L. Stine's 400 million selling series of books. This is directed by Ari Sandel and stars Wendy McLean Covey. Jack Black comes back. So, all right, maybe you have my attention again. Madison Eastman and Ken Jeong. And finally, on Netflix, also on the 12th, we have Apostle. A man attempts to rescue his sister who's been kidnapped by a religious cult. This is written and directed by Gareth Evans and stars Dan, the Man, Stevens, Christine Forsyth, Lucy Boynton, and Michael Sheen. All right, guys. We have a couple of movies this weekend. Amanda, what are you going to go see this weekend?
I'm really torn because Apostle, I think, is...
Ooh, that song's in my head now.
What?
Torn.
Oh, because Apostle, I think, looks really good, and I've heard good things about it. But First Man is Ryan Gosling and what's-his-face pairing back up from La La Land. So I am excited about that. Even though
Damien?
Yeah. Chazelle.
Chazelle.
But I didn't want to mess up his first name. I didn't know if it was Damien or Damon.
I don't care. Okay.
Damien.
Damien.
Yeah, hello, Damien.
Damien. So it sounded like Darwin.
you put the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Yeah, there you go. I'm not super excited about the content of the movie, just their pairing up. So I think I'm going to have to go with Apostle. Plus, I can watch it from my bed.
That's always
Netflix.
Handy. I'm going to Bad Times at the Royale.
You sound so white and southern.
That is exactly how it reads. Bad Times at the Royale.
That joke never gets old for me, by the way.
It's not even a joke. It's literally Bad Times at the Royale.
I know, but you've made it as a joke so many times, and I laugh every time still. It's a problem.
I mean, if I walked in and they're like, hey, you ready to have a bad time with the Royale?
I would turn around. Do you have a stuttering problem?
Walk out.
It's like I said it.
Exactly. I want to see First Man for the reasons you already mentioned. Goosebumps 2, don't care about. I didn't like the first one.
Okay.
I mean, it was fine.
Do you like the books, though?
I love the books.
Okay.
When so I was it's just eight. The movie. And Apostle, I think, is that looks really cool. I love Dan Stevens. So Bad Times, the Royale first. First Man second. Mm-hmm. Really disappointed. I thought it would be like 40-Year-Old Virgin, just a woman's tale, but it wasn't that. Then Apostle. Sorry, we lose you, Amanda. Took you a minute.
Made my nose sniffle.
Yeah. What about you, John? What are you going to go see? The Royale?
The Royale? See how naturally it comes to me? Mm-hmm. The Royale and then Apostle. Those are my two choices. I mean, we used to have like one choice and stick with it, but I really like this whole like, no, I'm going to see this first, then I'm going to see that, and then maybe if I have time or I haven't left my bed all weekend, I'll do this.
Amanda has ruined the show. She's basically...
I've turned everything into an honorable
mention. We all
mention.
Said a number one. We said we number did. One. Bad Time with Tata Royale. I just want to say it again. I think John and I both have that one. And Amanda, what's yours again?
My Apostle. First was Apostle.
See? Boom. We still stuck
because she doesn't
to
have to leave her room.
I like the order. We're talking about... It. We're not saying that
she normally advocates for theater stuff.
I do. Normally.
Give her a break. Why are you attacking her? Because she's a guy?
Yes, because she's a guy, God
just
damn it.
Just today.
All right, now it's time for our From the Outside In topic. What villains deserve their own movies? Maybe even franchises. We've seen a few villains before that had their own roles or their own movies. Maleficent, Venom are the newer ones. But you could argue that movies like Friday the 13th, Halloween, they're villain franchises as well. Do villains make a compelling character is what I want to know.
Absolutely. Because they're complex and intriguing, which leads them to how it leads into how unpredictable that they can be. And I think if you utilize the villains, their story, the best way possible, some of them you need a superhero to maintain the strength throughout the film. But there is zero reason why a villain can't actually still be centered and compelling at the same time. I think their inner struggle is what makes it interesting. And rather than having that be one section of the structured film, it's a continuation.
I think movies like Venom and Maleficent succeed because people are tired of watching the hero's journey. And sometimes, you don't want it all the time, but sometimes you want to be able to get lost in the villain story, in the guy that's not doing the right thing. You know, because we go to movies a lot of times, especially entertaining, quote unquote, fun movies. We go to those movies to get lost in them, to see people do things that we wouldn't do. And people always love the villain if they play it right or if it's written right. So the idea of watching their journey can be really, really entertaining because you get to live a little, live vicariously through a sumbitch or someone who doesn't have to do the right thing and who isn't looking up into the sky stalwartly and letting people know they just saved the planet. You know, they don't care about the planet. They just want to get to Taco Bell or whatever their goal is. Whatever their goal, they want to accomplish their goal. They want to fend off somebody and that's supposed to be heroic. And I think people need that once in a while. It's a cathartic release in a way.
I think it's interesting to see the dynamic between the hero and the villain from the villain's point of view, because and we've mentioned this a few times throughout the, especially with this argument as to whether or not the freaking driver is a freaking villain or a hero. But the hero of a story is always the one telling the story, and it's always painted with those sorts of glasses, and so that that's the true. Person who sees it understands the villain's, or the, actually in this case, the villain slash hero's point of view, and they're on their side, and all that that goes with it, and it's. To me, it could be so much more, well, not more of an interesting story, but just as interesting to see the dynamic flip to where all the things that the villain wants actually kind of make sense. It'd be like watching a whole movie with a villain. Oh my God, did Marvel already do that? They did. With
did you
Thanos.
Just have a conversation with yourself?
He's still having it. It's still going
I'm
on.
I'm still having it. Like exactly what Marvel did with Thanos. Thanos, though he seemed scary and though he seemed like, because we're still sort of seeing him from the point of view of the heroes, he had some really good ideas and they made sense.
And they're despicable, but they made sense.
Yeah.
Here, you got to make the hard choices sometimes, you know?
Right.
Can't make an omelet. Stop breaking some eggs.
No villain is going to not have...
Half the eggs.
No villain is just going to not have any type of struggle or type of conflict. They're the ones who have the most conflict. And that's what you need for a good movie to succeed, is a continuation of conflict. Basically, mini movies throughout the whole thing to keep it going and keep people interested. So what better than a villain to have those complex continuation of just basically issues to continue going to keep you interested in the movie. And you don't need to, I personally don't need to know why they are the way they are. I just want to see them deal, see how they respond to the conflicts that do arise within their life.
I actually oftentimes enjoy not knowing why they do what they do.
Yeah, I usually don't want to know.
Just because I can fill it in my mind and it's an imagination. I can fill in the backstory. All these origin stories are getting exhausting. I don't need to know why they... I don't need to know why the Joker is who he is. And it might be a great movie, but I don't need to know that. I like the idea of filling that in myself. And especially the only thing that really bothers me about villain stories, when they get their own movie, with the exception of straight up horror movies like Halloween or Friday 13th. And make no mistake, those are villain journeys. Those are about the villain mm-hmm. more than they are about the people. We don't care if they live most of the time, unless they're Jamie Lee Curtis. But when a villain becomes the subject of an entire movie, oftentimes what John said is true, you know, but also not in the good way. You know, the villain becomes the hero, and it should be that way. If we're watching their side of it, we should believe that whatever they're doing is for their reasons, and their reasons make sense in some way. We have to understand their reasoning to follow their journey. Too often, I think, because people, they want to win people over, they want to give them the joy or that good feeling. So they'll kind of neuter the villain so that they're not really too despicable when they get their own movie. I mean, go look at Maleficent. They kind of changed how evil she was by making her kind of soft by the end. That's not how that character should have been. You know, sometimes I wish they'd make villain stories and just make them villainous. Like, they don't get this magical conscience that they somehow avoided for 40 years, but now something's come up where, I can't do it now. And I think Venom did a good job with that. There was a real, you know, he didn't really care. He just came to like Eddie in particular. You know, it's not so much he wants to save anyone. He just likes Eddie. So I like that more, when they give more chances and they kind of don't give you so many forgiveness moments where, hey, they're not so bad. They're actually a good guy. They just get lost sometimes. No, sometimes bad is bad.
Well, and the biggest thing is making sure that where the movie starts, you're ending up, you're seeing some sort of change or progress. And for a villain, well, with a hero, we're typically looking for that to change for the benefit of their story. I would like to see villain movies, maybe not overwhelming, but at least one where the villain gets worse by the end. So you see a change, yeah. But they're not better by the end. Better. You see how maybe they become more despicable through the things that they encounter. And I think that makes it a more interesting story in terms of the villain, because I would want to see them as a hero. I'm looking at them through their scope of what they're dealing with, which leads them to where they need to be. And as long as there is some sort of difference from the beginning and the end, and I see conflict and resolution continuously throughout mm-hmm. the film, then I'm engaged the whole time. So I don't need it to be a feel-good movie. It
doesn't have to be a happy ending.
Right. As long as there's some sort of change. And I think that would be a very intriguing way to portray a villain, is to see them come out worse at the other end. And then maybe leave that open-ended for how it's going to affect others in the story, in the world, whatever.
Okay. Now, from that stimulating conversation, we're going to move on to a little game, I would say, where we're going to pick three villains we genuinely would love to see get a film or a franchise centered around, and how you would do it. Now, we want to clarify, it's not going to be just like three movies from movies you love. It's going to be one villain from a movie you love. It's going to be one from an obscure little discussed movie, and then one from a movie you don't care for. It doesn't mean you have to love it or hate it. You just don't care for it. But you enjoy the villain story enough that you want to watch that as a whole movie. All right? Everybody clear on the rules?
Yes.
Okay. Got it. First up, pick one villain from a movie you love. And how do you want to do it?
All right. I'm gonna have a little bit of fun to this. Now, this is a story all about how Hans and Simon's life got flipped upside down. And I'd like to take a minute to just sit right there. I'd like to tell you how Hans came to fall through the air.
This is cute.
I like it. It's a jingle. Yeah. It's a Christmas jingle.
In West Germany, born and raised on the playgrounds where they spent most of the day, is chilling out, maxing, relaxing, all cool, all shooting some b-ball outside of the school, when a couple of guys who were up to no good started making trouble in the neighborhood. They got in one little fight and their moms got scared and said, you and your brother are joining the West German Volksair.
This was my jam. I like it.
Will Smith, I don't think, is worried at all.
That is ending career.
He's good. He's not listening to this. Well, A, he's not listening to this. But B, if he were, I think he would probably say, I'm good. I think I'll be all right.
Yeah.
That was still impressive. Right.
You're like the first Aunt Viv rapper to the later Aunt Viv. You know what I'm saying?
Aw. The first Aunt Viv was good.
Okay, you're like the second Aunt Viv.
You son of a bitch.
That's what I meant. All right, that was good, man. Well, great presentation. I wish I was that clever. Mine here, so Hans Gruber from Die Hard, your first one. Mine is, I want to hear about Davy Jones from Pirates of the Caribbean 2. Dead Man's Chest. Yeah, Davy Jones, and I'm going to break this down. I just want to make sure everybody knows the story. He was a great sailor. He falls in love with Calypso, who's a sea goddess. She entrusted him with the task of ferrying the souls of those who died at sea to the next world. She gave him the Flying Dutchman, the ship, to do this. She swore that after 10 years, she would meet up with him, and they would spend one day together before he returned to his duties, although she never showed up. So he got angry. He felt betrayed, heartbroken, got enraged, and he turned the pirate brethren against her, saying if she were removed from the world, they would be able to claim the seas for themselves. So they did that. They imprisoned her into a human form. But despite betraying her, he still loved her. And in despair and guilt for what he had done, he carves out his own heart from his chest and places it in the dead man's chest. The chest was sealed, placed within this large wooden chest, along with some love letters and some other stuff, except a matchy musical locket. The chest was then buried, and then Jones kept the key with him at all times. And it's a story that I love that villain in that movie. I thought the artistic design of him was fantastic, just phenomenal. And his story about how he came to be imprisoned as Davy Jones is riveting. And it's also a love story. I think it could be a really great story to see in film. I think you could almost make that a trilogy. But you can make at least one great film out of that story, I think.
I'm interested.
I mean, it's not a rap song.
It's not a rap song. There were a couple moments where I thought you were trying, though, because I heard a couple rhymes. And I was like, is he trying to break out like Vanilla Ice right now?
Davy Jones, he's out to sea. There's Calypso. What's going to be happening? No, that didn't work.
Nope.
I appreciate the effort.
I lost it. Will Smith, I'm sorry. I'm old Aunt Viv, or I'm new Aunt Viv, too. Sorry. All right, Amanda, you're up. Batter up.
So the one I wanted to choose is already coming out. So I went a little bit different, and I went with Snape from Harry Potter because he's often seen as a villain.
Hang on. Let us put on our sun faces that you mentioned Harry Potter again.
You're so welcome. He's often seen as the villain because of the choices that he makes, and I like that dynamic where there's a very interesting dichotomy of him being good and him being bad and what's led him to that. We've already seen some of the backstory, so for him, I don't really feel like it's necessary to delve too far into it, but I also would appreciate in a film about him showing kind of those revelations of things that have brought him to where he was. But seeing from his perspective, from his view, why he makes the choices he makes and how he responds and feels and reacts to those choices throughout the series would be very interesting because he was so pivotal in the franchise. And we don't really ever get to see from his perspective. Very little do we get to see much from the villainous side, aside from Voldemort. We get to see Tom Riddle and Voldemort and how they emerged, but we don't really see the planning and what's going on between the Death Eaters and Snape from our perspective as an audience. We're only seeing Harry Potter and Hermione and Ron and, you know, company gather around the table and try to figure out how they're going to fight, rather than, you know, where we could put flip side with Snape's story and how he must deal with these emotions of knowing he has to kill Dumbledore. He has to make that decision to kill him, somebody that he cares about and respects, and also is planning that attack with people that he doesn't necessarily respect or like in dealing with the big bad. So I think that would be a very interesting dynamic, and I'm sorry for bringing up Harry Potter, but I'm kind of not. But I think it would be very interesting. Voldemort's already on the rise for a solo movie, so I can't really steal
really?
That. Yeah, you didn't know they're coming out with a Voldemort movie?
They're doing a Voldemort movie?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, I don't really know, because I don't really think I need it, but...
Isn't that the other eight movies explain his story pretty damn well?
Pretty much, yeah. I
don't see a point in this.
I didn't know that, but if that's the case, then that's silly. But your idea, I like that. I would watch.
Yeah, his movie is an origins.
Of course it is. We need origins.
Did it already come out? Maybe I missed it. I have no idea.
I don't think it already came out.
It says January of 2018.
No,
that didn't happen.
Maybe it
didn't actually happen.
Maybe it's not the Voldemort you think.
Nah, he's got the messed up nose.
Huh. All right. Well, we'll see.
Nose goes.
I doubt that ever happens, but if it does, we'll see. We'll see. All right. Now, number two. You guys ready for the next one?
Yeah.
Pick one villain from an obscure, little discussed film, which means Harry Potter's safe this time.
So I didn't go with a movie that nobody knows. I went with a movie that people don't really consider the villain from. So hopefully that counts.
Not really.
The Jungle Book? I feel like they don't really talk about it aside from Mowgli's perspective. So Shere Khan is the one.
Definitely doesn't count for what we had, but you know what? You already got it. So there you go.
It's little discussed and people don't talk about the villain from it. It's not a typical standard Jungle Book?
Yeah. It's little discussed?
In terms of villains.
Did he make like $500 million?
Eh. Okay. But they don't talk about the villain from it. That's just a tiny little piece of it.
Who's the villain? Which villain?
The one who ends up getting killed by Mowgli, but Shere Khan, who is the big bad, who's like, I don't want humans around here. And how I want this to play out is I still want it to be like the live action was in 2016, I think it was. I would like it to look that way because that style was really beautiful to me. But I would like it to be more about how they all respond with a human and like basically coming in as an alien to their territory. So I want to see them protecting their land and see it from their perspective of you're invading us. We're not doing anything wrong here. We want to get rid of humans because you don't belong here. And so I think that would be a very interesting swap of perspectives for us to see those animals protecting their land, because we don't always think about how humans are invading animals' territories. We're always thinking about, well, we need to expand. Sorry, animals. So we got to do what we got to do. And we're allowed to because we're humans. This is our planet.
We need casinos. Okay.
Fair.
We need casinos.
We could have Shere Khan running this casino.
There you go.
Sweet. I would totally go to that one.
So I think it would be interesting just for us to be able to see it from an animal's perspective, not even just from the Jungle Book, but just to think about how animals would feel losing their territory, losing their land.
All right. John, can you pick one from an obscure, little discussed film?
Maybe.
Well, go.
All right. And it's only because it's been a while since this movie's been out and it doesn't have the same sort of steam for it, but The Operative from Serenity.
Okay. I mean, unfortunately, that was a little scene, sadly.
Yeah. Mm. So it's still played by Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Why do you struggle with the, but you can get that out no problem?
I don't know. It's a level of difficulty to it. High level of difficulty, I'm kind of okay with it. Low level of difficulty. See, I screwed it up.
All right. What do you want The Operative to do?
Why I want to see this story is that I felt like the character of The Operative's, the whole concept of him is actually intriguing. He's not necessarily evil, not necessarily good, but he is following orders because he believes in something so wholeheartedly. And it'd be very cool to see him become that person. Or, you know what? I think I want the story to be like this. It's everything is after what takes place in Serenity happens, and we watch him have to come to grips with his whole belief system being broken down, but yet he is this character of high moral standards who wants to do something, and he has to relearn and find something else to believe in. And it'd be almost to the point where he becomes the next Shepherd Book, I think it'd be very cool.
Oh, that would be really... Okay, that'd be interesting.
Yeah.
I'd watch that. Mine is The Guest. It's one of my favorite movies from the last few years. Remember The Guest? Did you see The Guest?
Yeah.
You saw it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in that movie, which I believe is on Netflix, so please check it out, like 10 people and listeners of the show have seen this movie.
I own it.
So do I, because it's a great movie. But unfortunately, not many people... You know. Dan Stevens played David in that movie. He's a relentless killer of a man, and he was insanely difficult to kill himself. He's basically like the Terminator, but he's human. I want to see movies based on his stories previous from that film, how he came to be, what exactly is he. I want to see those stories because I think that would be riveting, or just more stories where he is the villain of the story. I think he was a great villain. He would greatly benefit because he's so charismatic. Dan Stevens is so charismatic. Mm-hmm. He's proven in taking so many different roles. And I would love to see him bring that back to the screen and a straight up just him tearing apart a town or a village or something. And for whatever his reasons are, I just think that would be great.
That would be pretty great.
I'm in for that for sure.
Bring more of those. All right, now, pick one you don't care for the movie, but you enjoy the villain's story enough to watch it. Last one.
All right, so Mute, which is directed by Duncan Jones, has a character played by Paul Rudd, Cactus Bill.
Oh, yeah.
Easily, the best part of that whole movie was Paul Rudd as this character. And for those who don't know, he's kind of like this disgraced soldier who's a surgeon, and he's trying to get back to the States and get his life back in order. However, he's a bit of an a-hole. And I really want to see the story of how he defected and how he became the person we see by the time Ute happens, because it would be a very fulfilling story and would end on dark tones. And I just think that it'd be fun to see Paul Rudd play this sort of character.
I'm all for Paul Rudd. I think he can handle anything. I'm convinced.
Anything? Sasquatch. Yeah. Paul Rudd is Sasquatch.
I would still watch it.
You'd have to be in stilts. I don't think he can do everything. All right, Amanda. Snape?
No.
Voldemort?
You said a movie that I don't care about. Yeah.
So what do you got?
So it was really hard for me to figure this one out because there's not many movies that I don't care for that has a villain that I do care about or would even be interested in learning more about. But I went with Thor Ragnarok, which was a very mediocre film in my opinion. And I went with Hela from that, who is basically, she's the Lady of Death, pretty much. But I like how dark she is. And I think that Bonham Carter would be the perfect one to play her, even though...
Oh, so you wouldn't even keep the same actress.
She's fine, but I really think that Helena would be much better at it. Just
negative.
You're insane.
I seriously think she'd be amazing. I'd be fine with Cate Blanchett keeping the role if she did, but I would love to see Helena take this on because she is very much she is the dark lady. She's so good at playing those types of roles. Anyway, whomever gets chosen.
Is this because of Harry Potter again? Are we back to Harry Potter?
No,
it feels
no.
Like Harry Potter.
Even in her Tim Burton films. Okay.
If it feels like just an excuse.
It's not an excuse.
There's
it isn't.
There's no way that she would do better than Cate Blanchett in that role. You couldn't convince me. You could duct tape me to that.
I'm not saying one way or the other. I'm just saying I would.
And put pins in my eyes and tell me that if you do not agree to this, then you're going to get more pins in your eyes. And I'd be like, give me the pins. Give me all the pins.
So anyway, she was the Asgardian goddess of death and the former executioner of Asgard. If you're not familiar with the story, her younger brothers are Thor and Loki. And I almost went to Loki for this, but I didn't. I think
he'll get one. Yeah.
He'll get one. I hope so.
He's getting a TV show.
Oh, yeah, he's getting a Disney streaming service.
But I would still like
service.
A movie that's not on the Disney streaming
how
service.
How much freaking Marvel stuff do we need in the world?
You know they're not going to stop.
Well, they could bring it down.
Yeah, right?
Bring it down. Don't oversaturate.
So I would like to see it start from where she gets imprisoned and held by her father, because I feel like that's a very dark twist to have your dad imprison you.
Would you recast Anthony Hopkins?
I don't know.
The answer is no.
No.
I mean,
poor John. He's just over your side over your entire.
He's like, I hate everything.
Everything you're saying is just wrong.
Your words are terrible today.
And I'm gonna ugh through all of it.
So I would like to see the. My God, man, let a woman speak.
Oh shit, she threw the.
All of a sudden now it's let the woman speak.
She threw the card. Bam! Right there. Go ahead, speak now.
I didn't go that. I would like to see her start where we start. We feel bad for her because her own father imprisoned her. Make it so that way we have some sympathy for her character. And as it starts to develop, we see the outer effects of Thor and Loki and how much power they have and how their appreciation is from people. Like people, at least Thor, people respond and listen. They didn't listen to her, which is why she forced them to. Mm-hmm. And so I would like to see her become, just in the beginning, a little bit of a weak character because that pummels her into strength, and that basically enrages her, where she's like, I'm going to take control of this. You are going to be my people. And I want to see the battle between her and her brothers take place. I would like to see her, I know I can't really change these things, but I'd like to see her kill her father because of what he did to her for imprisoning her and basically setting forth all of these changes.
Well, we do see her kill him.
We do see it.
No, he dies of old age.
Yeah. I was going to say we see him die, but we don't see her kill him.
Oh, yeah.
Right. She all wants to essentially rewrite all the things we've already seen.
Yeah. And the MCU, this is just a fantasy movie.
She wants to put flowers up in the corner, and she wants to do flowers. Drapes.
I want her to be dark. I want her to kill her own father. I wouldn't say that's flowers.
Dark, but I also, moody drapes.
I want her to win. I want her to then have Thor and Loki at her feet.
An uncomfortable couch to sit in.
She ends up working.
I kind of want your movie, but I want John's additives. I want his accessories.
But anyway, so she ends up working alongside Thanos. And then she ends up winning beyond him because he feels that they're in some sort of a team and she gets him to a weak spot. But she wants power so badly because of all of the things that she's encountered that she gets that power. And she's the one who turns things to ash.
I would love to see that, as long as Kate Blanchett's in it. I don't want to see Helen.
Fine. Keep her in the dang movie.
Nobody says dang anymore.
Can I say damn? Keep her in the damn movie.
Not now.
I don't remember. We're going to recast
Thanos with Ralph Fiennes?
Huh? We won't recast anybody. Damn, okay? Everybody stays.
Is Thanos going to be Ralph Fiennes now? That's what I want to know.
Sure.
Is he going to have a nose?
All right.
That's a weird question.
My pick, John's a weird guy. My pick is Anton Chigurh from No Country for Old Men.
I didn't see this.
It's a great movie.
I know.
Three quarters of the movie, and then it turns awful.
Really?
I can't stand the last quarter, which means it's a movie I don't care for.
I've heard that so many good things about the whole thing.
Oh, I've not. Because I saw it. I saw it, and I don't agree with those things. I know a lot of people feel that way. Good for them.
Okay. I haven't looked into it much. It's one that I know I should watch, but is it too
happy
Western-y for
day.
Me?
It's on Netflix. It's not a Western at all.
Oh, I thought it was Western-y.
No. I mean, there's a cowboy hat.
That's Western to me.
Anyway, Anton Chigurh, how do I say? I love the character. I absolutely love the character. He's a remorseless hitman who kills indiscriminately. He flips a coin to decide character's fate. He lets, fate decide. If they live or die. It's a cool concept. And he's got
I've seen this someplace.
What's that?
I've seen this someplace.
Yeah, No Country for Old Men.
Maybe.
Oh, you were doing the movie. Gotcha. He's also got a captive bolt stunner as a weapon, which is something I've never seen in a movie, and it was pretty amazing. So I want to see either more stories of his or a prequel. You know, and find out how he came to be the way that he is and how that all... Just how it all came to be. I was fascinated with that character. Even after I left the movie and I was frustrated with the ending, I did still love that character because I feel like it doesn't have an ending. It's one of those movies. Many people love it. It won Best Picture. I'm obviously in the minority, but it wasn't a fun movie to me.
It doesn't.
Which means it ain't good.
It doesn't have a resolution or you have to imagine.
I think they build the entire movie up and then don't care. That you don't get anything they built up to.
Oh, wow.
That's how I felt.
Okay. I can't wait to watch this now.
That's how I felt. So that's who I want. I want to see his movie. I think that would be really cool. All right. We got some listener picks. Just real quick, let's run around. Let's see if they would make good villains. John, what do you got?
From Ty Nelson, I have David Urshan from The Other Guys. I really like this idea because it's for the reasons Ty Nelson says. It's Steve Coogan, and how awesome would it be to see Steve Coogan do stupid villain stuff badly?
All right, this would be more of a comedy, right? A comedy, yeah. All right,
yeah.
All right.
Scotch Calgaro says Randall Flagg from the Walking Dude from The Stand.
Mm-hmm. That's
how do you guys
one.
Feel about that?
I mean, he's evil. I would watch his plight. Yeah. I would just do the entire Stand from his point of view.
That might
work. But he doesn't win, you know?
Quite the ending.
And then Michael Bonovich says, Sinister Six, make it a heist movie. You know what? We should get James Gunn on that one.
I agree. Why not? Put him in every Marvel movie except Marvel movies. I think that would be great. Sinister Six is so hard to do. We talk about it a little bit in our Venom spoiler cast. It's so hard to do, but at this point, I might be interested. But it would be hard for me to see that movie without Spider-Man in it.
I don't know if that would, I don't know.
I don't know if it would work without Spider-Man, because so many of those characters are inherently built into the Spider-Man lore. It's really
hard. Venom work without Spider-Man.
Yeah, but Venom is a character that kind of works on his own. And also, he already proved he didn't work with Spider-Man. So, Amanda, what do you got? Who do you got from listeners? I mean, we post this in the Facebook group and on Twitter and da-da-da-da.
Yeah, and da-da-da-da-da. Brian Lowry says Hans Gruber would have been fun.
Hey, we got a whole rap song with Hans Gruber.
Yep. Superhero, though, maybe I would go with Deathstroke. Huh? Craig Schermerhorn, I am in for this one. Top dollar from The Crow.
Oh, bang, bang.
Yeah.
Fuck, I'm dead.
That would be very interesting.
I would watch. Yeah. If you could get Michael Wincott to still do it.
Ooh.
But yeah. How would you do that? Because he's about 20 some years old.
I was going to say, how would he?
He would have to be tone.
Fair.
I don't think he could be 20 years older according to the movie. So you'd have to do a prequel.
Yeah.
I'd love it just to see the hair and the weird sister relationship.
Oh, man. It would be so good.
I like it. By the way, were they humping? They were humping, right?
Yeah, they were humping.
Totally humping. They were brother and sister, and they were humping, right?
I mean, it was a different time.
Were they brother and sister? I believe so, right?
They called each other brother and sister.
Yeah, they called each other that.
Maybe they're just like, hey, you're my brother.
Nobody that's doing it would just call them, hey, what's up, sis? Let's get it on. Nobody does that.
Hey, bro. Maybe it was like a friend's bro. Brother.
No. Anybody else or no?
No, I think I was only going to do the two, right?
Johan Eriksson, Dr. Doom as an anti-hero and not a villain would be cool. And that is an awesome pick. I agree. That could be great. Nobody with me?
Mm.
What? Mm? You don't like Dr. Doom? He's one of the best villains in the Marvel Universe. Just because Fantastic Four can't get it right doesn't make him bad.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe.
I don't know if it's one I need or care about.
This is what, you know what? Watch. Every slight you had in Amanda, I'm taking it off the table. It didn't happen because you got this one so wrong.
What? Because I don't agree. I don't 100% agree with Dr.
That's
Doom.
That's how opinions work, John. You either agree with me or you don't.
He's interesting but boring.
Dr. Doom is fascinating. Man, look at the there's so much to explore that movies have not even touched on with that character.
But, there might be some truth to that.
Christy Flores, she says Moriarty from Sherlock.
This is up your alley.
I like that. I assume she means from the TV show, because whenever people just say Sherlock, that's usually what they mean. I just take the character Moriarty from Sherlock Holmes in general.
Right.
Great character, master criminal. I would love to see him see a story told from his perspective as he goes up against Holmes, because he often bests Holmes. So it would be kind of cool to see that, I think. See the villain play chess with the hero.
I mean, I'm for that, especially the one from Sherlock, because that guy was amazing.
From Sherlock's great. He was great. Yeah, he was. Josh says Deacon Frost from Blade. Deacon Frost is a great character. Stephen Dorff couldn't play
him. On the other hand?
No, he's great at Deacon Frost.
But we could still have Wesley Snipes be our Blade.
Well, I don't think if you do Deacon Frost, I don't think you do it with Blade, because that story's already been told. You just do Deacon Frost, and that could be done. As he rised up the ranks, because he was not a pure blood, and he rose up the ranks to join the leaders of the vampire.
Yeah, that's true.
How did he get there? What did he have to do? I would watch that.
Okay. So that origin story we're okay with.
Yeah, it's Interview with a Vampire.
Mm-hmm.
Man, we got more Venom. We got Venom. Venom.
Venom.
To talk about.
Pussy.
But first, is there anything else that you saw recently you want to mention? John, you watched like two seasons of stuff.
Yeah, I watched the third season, and I actually decided to revisit a little bit of the first season, but I watched a complete third season of Man in the High Castle. That show is not disappointing, and you can tell that Amazon just keeps on throwing money and more money at that show because of the effects they're getting and the amount of production that's going in, how beautiful it looks, and the storytelling is pretty great. And at any given moment, Walter Bishop's going to show up and mess everything up. That's how I feel at this point with the way the story has been going. But very cool, very interesting story, and I can't wait to see more of that. I'm a little disappointed that I watched it all, but whatever. And I also watched the second season of Big Mouth, which is a cartoon that makes me cringe, makes me laugh, makes me remember what it's like to be going through the life at this age. It makes me cringe some more, makes me a little bit sick, but all of it is fun and hysterical. And if you're interested in something, then just take your mind off of things and just have some fun. Big Mouth is a good way to go.
Man, that's a lot of TV for a weekend.
He's been busy. Well,
in defense, Big Mouth is like only like eight or 10 half hour episodes.
Oh, that's easy.
But isn't Man in High Castle 10 hour long?
It's 10 hour long episodes, and some of them are actually longer than an hour. It was, man, it was completely on accident.
Did you wear a catheter?
No, I should have.
I'm going to start getting one of those for Binge Fest. I'm just going to sit there and catheter it up. You know what? I don't want to get up. Shut up. I don't want to get up. I want to sit there on my couch in my pajama pants and watch my shows.
With your pee bag.
and pee in a bag like God intended.
Exactly. That's how you want. Amanda, have you watched anything recently?
I am loving A Million Little Things, which is the show on, what is it?
ABC.
ABC? Yeah. I love
it so much. I don't know where it aired.
I watch it on Hulu. But I am really excited for it. Excited for more episodes. I'm curious where they're going to go with the story, but I like the elements that they're touching on and the dynamics and the relationships between each character. Hmm. James Roday is, I feel like he's pretty much Sean, but
he's Sean Spencer, but he's not allowed to be funny.
He's still pretty funny.
Yeah, but he's not crazy funny.
Yeah, no, he's different. He doesn't have that partner that he's always going back and forth with, but he has that similar humor. And everybody else, like, all of the casting is really solid, which is hard for a show with this many members that are important and, you know, pivotal to the entire story's arc. So curious where it'll go and what we'll find out.
Excelente. I saw Night School.
Yeah?
I did see Night School. It's funny. There's one moment I laughed 5 minutes straight from.
Is it in the trailer?
Like, I was very uncomfortable. I was laughing so hard. No, it's not.
Oh, wow.
It's just one moment where a guy falls and then something that happens. That's hysterical. I'll say it's funny. I mean, it has it's an enjoyable, it's an average movie, but it's fun. Funny. I wouldn't call that one good. It's fun enough. It's fun enough.
Is it worth a theater visit?
I mean, yeah, those kind of movies I think are, because you get more from a comedy like that if you're in a crowd and everybody's laughing with you and you're having that great time. Tiffany Haddish is pretty funny. Kevin Hart, I'm getting kind of tired. He's got the same shtick in every movie, so he's kind of getting a little thin for me. But it's still funny.
He does look...
has a lot of funny moments.
He does look pretty interesting in that Bryan Cranston movie that's coming out, though.
Yeah, he does.
Whatever the name of it is.
That's Uninvited? No.
The Upside is the name of that movie.
Okay. So we'll look for that one. And yeah, I did watch Walking Dead, which lost 50% of its audience.
That's crazy.
Since last time. I think people might be tired of it. Johnny, what do you think? You think people are getting done?
With what?
Walking Dead.
What show?
Exactly. I think that nails it. All right. Well, that's all I've seen. So we're going to go ahead and cut into Venom, but make sure you subscribe on Android or Spotify or Google Podcasts or Stitcher or Apple Podcasts. Please give us a review if you can, if you like the show, if you enjoy the banter, if you just care.
If you love us enough.
Leave us a review. Just like us a little. I don't need love. I don't need that kind of dedication. Just like us a little. Just go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. And you can also find...
just enough.
Just enough. You can find John's artwork on Insta and everywhere else at rjohn.draws, Amanda on Smirk, and me and my other podcast, Smirk as well, and The Blacklist Exposed, which will be coming back shortly. Now let's move into Venom.
I've always believed that space exploration is crucial in our quest to cure everything that ails us here on Earth.
So I have to ask, how does that work? You know, exactly the Life Foundation thing. How does it go about, say, testing pharmaceuticals?
Eddie, we're talking about the rocket here.
No, I'm not. I'm not. I'm talking about the allegations.
It says that you recruit the most vulnerable of us to volunteer for tests that more often than not end up killing people.
Eddie,
the doors that they never got to work out.
Thank you very much.
We're not finished.
Yes, you are, Mr. Brock.
Is that a threat?
Have a nice life.
Okay, we're in the Venom spoiler cast. Get ready, people. We're about to Venom it up. I don't know, but they're not gonna be spoilers right away. We're gonna talk about real quick our spoiler free reactions, but first, here's the plot. If you didn't know, or if it even matters, Eddie Brock is played by Tom Hardy. He's an investigative journalist on the rise in San Francisco. He's got a fantastic fiance in Anne, who's played by Michelle Williams, and his employer just assigned him to the biggest interview of his career, billionaire and space pioneer Carlton Drake, Riz Ahmed. Eddie goes full Brock, as we come to learn he's not much for forward thinking, and accuses Drake of crimes on the air. Only he gained awareness by hacking Anne's emails to get that information. In one singular moment, Eddie loses it all. Months later, Drake has recovered the alien life forms that remain from a failed space mission and proceeds with conducting covert human experiments. That's right, he breaks that law. Eddie is tipped off to this, breaks into the facility, accidentally exposes himself to the black goo. Doesn't mean he takes his pants off, he just finds it. That will now share Brock's life force as Eddie is the perfect host for the alien symbiote.
Symbiote.
Forged with newfound superpowers, the ability to snack on heads at an instant, and a penchant for clever retorts and a gravelly tone, Eddie and Venom merge as one to take on Drake and thwart his escalating plans, as well as maybe somebody else or something else. All right, so that's what Venom is about. Now, spoiler-free reactions, just real quick. Couple sentences and your score, if 10 hours is the full price of admission, for people that don't want the spoiler cast part. Amanda, real quick, what'd you think of Venom before we get into the spoilers?
I was really surprised by it because I didn't go into it with high expectations. And
with high hopes, would you say?
Yeah.
Well, sorry, a lot of Panic at the Disco.
You need to bring it down a little bit. Actually, maybe we should play that. Liven us up.
Anyway,
so I was pretty surprised by how much I did end up enjoying it. I liked that they had a good combination of action with comedy, and I felt like Tom Hardy really portrayed the roles of him and Venom really well. So I did enjoy it. I would give it $7 out of 10.
Woohoo! What about you, John?
The build up for me was a little slow. Though I understand what they were doing, they were saying, here, let's get to know Eddie Brock and why you should be on Eddie Brock's side. And let's give Tom Hardy a chance to charm your pants off, because he's really good at that. I don't know why he kind of played him meekish or nebbish or whatever it was he was going for. It was just a weird combination. However, once the story started really progressing into the action and more about what Venom is and the combination of the two of them together, it started to become a lot more fun and enjoyable. I had a lot of trouble through the first part just because I spent most of the time just feeling sorry for Tom Hardy for being a jerk. 650.
Okay, I was surprised. I had a lot of fun. Didn't want to see this movie at all because I was starting to get more excited as we got up to it. But it's funny. It's fun. It's violent, even for PG-13. I thought it really pushes the limits of what PG-13 should do. A lot of head snacking, even if you don't see the blood. 650. So, good time. Really, really, yeah. Really good time.
I feel like I should lower my score now.
Nope, you're right on.
Pussy.
That was so funny. Just hearing Venom is a vaudeville act. I did not know that was going to be the case going into it, that he was going to be so funny as a character.
Yeah.
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 So, it made it really enjoyable.
So we're officially into spoilers, people. So if you have not seen Venom, prepare to be initiated.
What the hell are you?
I am Venom. And you are mine.
You bit somebody's head off.
Fuel in the tank. Think of yourself as my ride.
Where are you going?
We need Carlton Drake's rocket.
You gonna eat anybody else?
Most likely.
Oh, God.
That is why we are here. Cooperate, and you might just survive. That is the deal.
Critics versus us. This is my first question, all right? So critics, generally, except for this Rotten Tomato critic.
Hey,
I gave
congratulations.
It a positive. Single-handedly going to save DC's universe, too. I'm going to go back and brighten up Batman versus Superman and Justice League a little bit. But critics versus us. The critics are saying, I think it was last I checked, 31% rotten, which means like 31% of critics that reviewed liked it on Rotten Tomatoes. Why do you think there's such a discrepancy? Because if you look at the audience reviews, it's more like 88% liked it. It doesn't happen very often. I think it was like that with, I can't remember last time it was like that with a movie like this. What's the discrepancy? John, you're a huge comic book fan. Do you understand why critics don't seem to enjoy this movie?
This is one of those things where you have to go in sort of already bought to the idea of Venom, and you are having to accept the idea that you're going to go through a origin story that shows that Venom and even Eddie Brock aren't necessarily great people. So to go into, I believe it has a lot to do with that first act, getting to know Eddie Brock, how kind of like jerkish it is, and then there's a lot of buying the audience back after that. And if you are not easy to buy, then you're just not going to be.
I also think part of it is they're looking for it to be one of those big bang blockbusters because of the names that are associated with it, you know, being that type of property, mm-hmm. a Marvel property. It's not supposed to be that, I don't think. It was never intended to be that kind of movie that is overwhelming with its action and its special effects and everything like that. I think it did what it was intending to do, and it worked for me, but I can see for other people who had high expectations and compare it to something that's different from what it is, that you would come out feeling underwhelmed.
You know, it's funny. As I watched this, then wrote my review, which is on the website, dionwithoutsider.com. That's twice I pimped myself. I feel like Troy Heinrichs right now. I did that, and then I started reading the critics' reviews because I was kind of curious, like, what are you complaining mm-hmm. about? Like, what are the complaints? And it was very formulaic and a lot of things like that. And I'm just sitting here going, what? Everybody gives high marks to every freaking MCU movie, regardless. And I like the MCU, so please don't write me a letter. But I feel like it gets such a free pass. It's ridiculous to me. It's the same thing. You've got a monster. You've got a character who becomes a reluctant hero, saves the world. Yeah, all that stuff is formulaic. And it happens in every MCU movie. And it happened here. And here, this was a completely different character. You have a very irredeemable character in many ways. You have a lead who's not that likable, like John said. He's kind of a dick and a loser. I mean, he's more like more people I know than most heroes. He doesn't spend the movie looking stalwartly into the sky thinking I've got to save everyone. It's more like, oh, I just saved everybody? I didn't mean to do that. You know, he's a reluctant hero, or he's an ignorant hero. I don't even know which one it is, but he's a completely different character in that respect. So I don't know how that's formulaic when we haven't seen a character basically be a villain and also save people, because Venom is a villain. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't think he ever comes across as not a villain. Just that he comes to respect his host and he comes to say, all right, maybe I'll give this planet a shot. I just don't think it's as sloppy as the reviews were trying to say. And using the word, you know, formulaic is true. It is true. So I don't disagree that it's a formulaic script. Just that why is it okay when every other movie, like, mm-hmm. why is it okay when Marvel uses that same template for every film? Infinity War excluded. Every other one has the same template for every film.
Every movie has the same template.
Yeah, almost every template.
You can alter it a little bit, but you're going to hit the same. Your intention is to hit the same beats at the same time and to do the same thing and have it go in a certain order. And if you're not doing that, then you're not going to be a good enough movie. You're not going to hold up next to Marvel. They're going to say, why did you change your format? It's not a good enough movie. You didn't do things right. This movie still does it. It still shows the difference, the change from the beginning to the end. It shows a villain who is also a hero in ways. We're combined into the same entity. And it's sure, maybe they structured it well to how a formula of a script should be done. But they still had interesting aspects to the film, and they still had fun with it.
Yeah.
And it seems like maybe they just had too much fun. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't honestly, in closing, I could not – in closing, you know, my thoughts on this, I don't know what they did that pissed so many critics off.
I saw special effects a couple of times, and I thought the effects were fine. I
thought they were pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you want? It's black goo, and it's doing all kinds of crazy stuff. The action scenes were inventive. It reminded me – John, back me up on this. This is kind of how I took it. I'm saying John just because I know he's a bigger Ant-Man fan than you are, probably, Amanda. It reminded me a lot of really, really dark Ant-Man because it was very much popping all over the place. It was, you know, it was like an evil Ant-Man because it was very inventive and creative and just kind of seeing what can we do? You know, this black goo is as handy as every duct tape we've ever seen. So it's just like, what can we do with black goo? And
but I think fun. I think part of the criticism that you might have accidentally touched on is that it's kind of like evil Ant-Man. It's evil something or other. It's not even evil Deadpool. It's missing part of the joy that movies that in the MCU have. It's missing part of the joy that even Deadpool has. And that's where I think people may be having a lot of trouble with it, because it just doesn't have that element that makes you smile throughout the movie. And Marvel's really good at doing that. And it's why DC gets a beat up so much, is because they're trying to make these weird operatic stories about gods and monsters, whereas Marvel's just like, hey, we're here to have fun. It's smile time. Let's go. And here's another one where it's, sure, it embodies the character fairly well, but it just doesn't have that joy because the character's not very joyful.
I laughed a lot.
I was going to say, I was smiling and laughing through the entire movie. But I think John's point may be, and correct me if I'm wrong, John, you're talking about like...
No, his point is. Your point is this, John. We're changing your point.
I feel like you're talking more specifically about like the relationships that end up happy. Like in this movie, we don't have a really sweet conclusion to his relationships. His only relationship now is with Venom. He doesn't have that conclusion, which is a sweet tie with her. And in most of the Marvel movies, they wrap that up.
Yeah,
they bring it back together. You have some sort of
she leaves the fiancé because we find out he was a bad guy after all.
Right. something like that. And this movie doesn't play to those cliches. I don't know. I feel like that's part of the difference here, which to me works, but I can see how a critic who's expecting it to fall very formulaic would expect it to just go in the same direction.
You're not exactly you're close to what I was saying.
Okay.
I actually thought the way they wrapped up the story was great. The whole way the relationship with Anne ended, where it's like he's talking to her on that stoop and Venom in his head is like, she totally doesn't know I'm going to get her back. And which is awesome. That was actually a funny moment.
I love it.
And through the first half of the movie, it's not something you could smile at. You're just like, why is this guy such a dick? Why can't he just see his own problems? Oh, great. Now he's going to throw himself off this bridge, right? It's going to be totally the next step, but which didn't happen. But still, you kind of go through these thoughts as you're experiencing with it, which is kind of a fun trip. Not a fun trip, but it's kind of an interesting trip to go on with the character, but hard at the same time. And
see, you and I saw the movie different. I had fun the whole time. I thought Tom Hardy, when we can just segue to Tom Hardy's performance, I thought he was a blast, an absolute blast. I loved watching whatever the hell he was going to do. He reminded me a lot of like Sam Rockwell, and just that he just tried so many different things with his character. I mean, from his walk, from his talk to his everything he did was fun to watch. I never saw it as hard to watch, not once. Not his performance.
It was fun to watch from the aspect of trying to decipher the actual act in front of you. As being somebody who's judging what somebody's doing on the screen, very fun to watch. Very interesting as far as watching somebody perform their craft on the screen, where he's making these decisions, and it's interesting to see those decisions play out and become that character. Yes, I agree with that. However, the character's still a dick.
Yeah, he is, but somehow, I don't know, I ended up kind of rooting for him. I felt sorry for him in a way. So I felt pity for him. Like, he was that guy that kept trying to do the right thing. He knew what the right thing was, but he screwed it up every time. He was just that lovable loser in a way. We know he's not going to come out and do the right thing, which is why he's a perfect compliment to Venom, because Venom doesn't want to do the right thing. He just wants to bite some heads and, you know, eat. Food. Amanda, did you like Tom Hardy?
Tater tots and chocolate.
I love Tom Hardy's performance. I also would say that I had a lot of fun with his character throughout the movie. I knew that he was an idiot. He did some really dumb things. He continued to make mistakes. I don't think it was intentional, and I feel like he was oblivious to them for a while. And, you know, that's why he didn't even realize he hadn't apologized to her.
And
so,
arrogant. I think arrogant's a word that should be thrown in here, too.
Yeah. And so while I wasn't not rooting for him, I was also kind of like, man, you really need to get your shit together, dude. But you see moments of redeemability even in the beginning, because even when he's in the store, with the lady. You know what I mean? Like, he's not opposed to doing the right thing. He just has moments of weaknesses where he does something really stupid.
He's a real person in that respect.
We're all human. We all make mistakes. So I feel like he was relatable in that way. I don't know that I make mistakes as dumb as his, but, you know, whatever. But when it comes to how the story concludes, you see a nice transition between his character not realizing the things that he's done and having Venom, who is a villain, teach him and show him, you're making dumb mistakes. Like, you need to apologize. You need to do this and you need to do that. And that's the villain telling him you need to be better when he's,
you That's know, how messed up you were.
Right. That the villain who eats people's heads is telling you, dude, stop screwing up. And I feel like they had a great rapport, which is weird because it's Tom Hardy and Tom Hardy. They had a great rapport with each other where, although he didn't have that relationship by the end, he didn't resolve everything by the end. In some ways he did because he maintained a friendship with her, but they didn't have their relationship. But then he formed a new relationship, which was with Venom. And that was a relationship that I was much more invested in. So I think if I was hoping that there would be a good relationship for him between him and, what's her, Anne?
Anne.
Then I think I would be very disappointed, but I was fine with it. He doesn't deserve to have her back. He screwed her over pretty bad. Her boyfriend's pretty nice. He's not a jerk. He was helpful.
He was great.
Yeah.
He was such a nice the whole time. He was Peter Parker in this story.
Yeah. But we still get to see Tom Hardy have a relationship, have a friend, have somebody that he does care about. And that also encourages him to be better in a weird way. So they kind of ping off each other like you're. And I also feel like that's our inner voices, too. We constantly, as humans, have the bad voice and the good voice.
Wait, there's supposed to be a good voice?
Yeah. Sorry, John.
Yeah. Sorry, buddy. Well, speaking of voices, there we go. Look at this. I'm just looking for segues.
Yeah, right.
The voice in his head, that was my biggest concern walking into the movie because I'm walking in, and I know it's going to be a factor because I've read the comics. I'm a huge Spider-Man fan, and even I didn't want a Venom movie, so you can put me in the same list. But especially after Spider-Man 3, God, Topher Grace, you should still be ashamed of whatever you just did. Which, by the way, Tom Hardy proved that Topher Grace was bad at that role.
Mm-hmm.
I actually thought he was fine at that role until I saw Tom Hardy, and I'm like, wow, he was bad. Okay, he obliterated that role. So the voice thing, I was worried was going to be an issue because I knew they were going to do it this way where you heard Venom's voice and he's basically going to be talking with Tom Hardy. Did that work for everybody? John, Amanda, did that work for you guys? I mean, because for me, I'm watching it, except when he's actually talking to his head, because I was just watching this movie with Philip, whole listener, and he pointed out exactly what the problem was, is that he's never really looking at the head. Because he's kind of off a little bit. He's looking a little below it.
Oh.
So that part was a little distracting. But anytime you actually hear him in the streets or in the convenience stores or any other time, it really worked great. It was fun to me to watch that him banter with himself. How did you guys? Did you guys like this dynamic or was it a little too much for you? Where do you stand on the old Venom Hardy dichotomy? Venom Brock dichotomy.
I thought that was pretty well done. I thought the balance between how well they used it or how often they used it was pretty good. And it was interesting seeing Tom Hardy reacting to the voice in his head the way it was happening. So, yeah, I was totally fine with it. It was and it punched like those great little moments even harder. Like, pussy!
Oh my gosh, that was so funny. There were so many good moments that I think without it, this movie would not be good. If it were just a villain versus him, I feel like that's where we start to get into the cheesy cliches.
Like where the villain pops out and talks and then goes back to him and then you just, yeah, it's not really a play-by-play.
Yeah, and so you're able to get the perspective not just of Eddie Brock for how he's dealing with this, but you also, they did a really great job of showing how disastrous this looks to other people. He looks batshit crazy. And they did a good job of showing that too. I liked all of the voices. I didn't notice when he wasn't looking at eye level with it. I'm sure that's really difficult, but for me, it still worked because I mean, maybe if it would have been pointed out to me, I probably would have noticed it.
Well, they probably should have just put focused. like a I don't know, wrapped her head on a stick and just waved it in front of him. Like, yeah, here, right? look here. And he's looking a little lower than he should, probably.
Yeah they probably used like tennis balls or something just to get like something to try look at. And when they built the model around it, it was too much. I didn't notice it, though. Usually that's something I pick up on right away. So good on Philip for...
right?
Very astute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I think they did... And John made a good point of saying that they used it enough. They didn't overuse it. I think if they would have tried to use it more than they did, it would have been too much.
Overkill.
Yeah, but they also didn't underutilize it either. I feel like they found a really good balance of how often and when this should be used.
They used it so... I wouldn't say scarcely because they do use it frequently, but they didn't overdo it, like you said, which made it more fun when it happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And his reactions whenever he killed someone was always, to me, hysterical because, you know, I just ate a head and B, I just killed that guy. Stop killing that guy. What do I do? But he also has kind of that, like every once in a while, he'll have that glimmer of like, yeah, I just did that.
Yeah.
And then I go back to being panicked. Hardy makes that whole thing work. And that voice, I was really worried about it because you hear it in the trailer and I'm like, I don't know if this works, but it really, really worked great. It's such a nice, gravelly, Batman-y, but darker kind of tone that really, really worked for the character.
The trailer did not do this movie justice whatsoever.
No.
I had zero desire to see it when I saw the trailers.
Same here.
I almost did not go see this movie. I was like, I could go to sleep, honestly, or watch Grey's Anatomy.
Or A Star Is Born Again.
I did have my ticket set for that.
See, there you go.
Are you going to behave yourself tomorrow?
No, I'm going to do my job. That's what I'm going to do. I can't, you know, and not do my job.
But we don't want to repeat.
Repeat?
Of the Daily Globe incident.
Ow, really?
Baby, you were run out of New York. I don't want you to run out of San Francisco.
No, I still have currency in New York. I was going places. I wasn't running. I was going places. I moved to San Francisco for you. Yeah. You are my home.
That's about yourself, champ.
Now that you've seen Venom, are you guys glad that they made a Venom movie? Or do you still feel like this was a fluke? So maybe this is just a fluke. Like they couldn't repeat the success. Because we all liked it, so I'm going to call it a success. I don't really, and the box office proves that people went to see it at least.
My biggest disappointment to this is that this felt very disconnected from Spider-Man, and that's something I really want to see from Venom, some sort of connect back to Spider-Man. But this is way, way far from what Spider-Man is. So, it's almost as if Spider-Man's not in this world at all. So that's my big disappointment in it.
Well, I mean, to a degree, but they also, I mean, he references moving from New York, and you have Jameson's son as the astronaut. I know, man, you're not a huge Spider-Man fan, but J. Jonah Jameson's son became an astronaut, and he was on a space mission that crashed and burned, and I think that's where Venom came back. I don't remember if that's where Venom came back, but that's what happened. So Jameson was a direct reference to Spider-Man. So they referenced Spider-Man. I don't know if you never see him swinging by.
The end clip where it shows. I mean, I know it's not for this, but I kind of wonder if they're trying to say we're including this because the worlds are going to collide in the future.
That's possible.
You know what I mean?
I can't see how they wouldn't. You know, right now they've got Tom Holland rented out to the MCU or whatever, however that arrangement's working. I was actually, John, with you, I'm kind of surprised you didn't see Tom Holland do a walk by at some point. Or something, yeah. Something, because he's under contract, so they can make him do it.
Yeah.
That I was surprised of. Do you think that would have, like, kind of distracted from this movie, though? I mean, I could see it in future movies, but maybe not this one. It would have for you?
Yeah, if it's, because they're obviously leading to a second one, mm-hmm. because he's still there. There's going to be more coming from this character. And if they include it going forward, that would be fine. But if I saw Spider-Man in this, that would take away from all of the moments that I experienced for Venom, because then I'm going to be focusing on, oh, what's going to happen next with Spider-Man? Is Spider-Man going to show back up? Oh, that was cool that Spider-Man was there. Small little references that you guys can pick up as huge comic book fans of mm-hmm. Spider-Man. Yeah. I think that's fine because I haven't read the comics. I have no idea what references are there or aren't, unless they were in the movies or something, you know what I mean? So for me, it worked, and I would have been a little bit I would have been distracted had they included him or had, you know, Tom Holland walking around.
That's a fun dichotomy because John's like, I needed more Spider-Man references. And you're like, I did want them.
Well, if they were, if
maybe... No, it's just an interesting because he's more of a comic book fan. So, and I'm kind of with him. I probably would have preferred more Spider-Man references. But general audiences probably don't know that stuff.
References would be fine. I think just actually showing any glimpses of Spider-Man would have been too much. Now, if he would have gone and looked at a newspaper and saw Spider-Man in that, like just a picture of Spider-Man in the newspaper, that would have been super cool. I would have been down for that.
This movie could have had Tobey Maguire emo dancing, and it probably would have worked. They finally could have made that work.
I don't know if there's anything that can make that work.
And Venom could say something like, what the f*** is that?
Pussy. Is that pussy?
All right. So I think in the future you will get more Spider-Man now. References, though. Yeah.
We finally saw the turd on the wind.
Oh, boy.
line happen and how it came about.
Yeah.
How do you feel about it now?
It's not awful. I mean, it actually was kind of funny. It worked better in the context, but it's also, I think, the movie had won me on its side by that point, which makes a huge difference. The trailer does not win me over, and that's the biggest problem. But when I saw the movie won me over, so it wasn't as bad. Is that a good enough answer?
That's a good enough answer. See, for me, I was actually disappointed because the whole part, a lot of the movie, I'm looking for how that line came about.
You're actually spending time going, what is the breakdown of the origin of Turd in the Wind?
Yeah, I wanted to know. And besides the fact that it seems like there's probably some sort of like conversation that happens between the lady who runs that bodega and him. And like each time he walks in, there's some other like old Asian saying they throw back and forth. And it would have been cool if that was where that kind of came from. But it's not. It's totally looks like it's what Venom says because that's his understanding of how to be insulting.
It makes sense. So you were hoping for an actual turd to be rolling in the wind at some point so that he could reference it later?
Well, I wanted some sort of like breakdown of, well, not really I didn't want to see a turd in the wind, but maybe like somebody referred to the rolling symbiotes as like looking like turds rolling around or something. I don't know.
You're weird, Jen.
You are very what? Weird.
We don't need to hear turd twice in one movie. That's for sure. That's just a word I don't like. It's
about 15 times just in this recording.
And I feel bad. I feel like I'm going to have to go back and bleep them all out. Pussy stays, but turd, gotta go. Gotta go.
Now jump out the window.
I do got to ask, should it have been rated R? That was a big debate. A lot of people complaining that it went from R to PG-13, even though Ruben Fleischer, the director, said it was always going to be PG-13. It didn't bother me at all. I thought it worked fine. But did you guys wish it was more violent and bloody?
It was good enough for me, but I can see that from what I've heard, people who are big fans of the comics, there's a lot more gore to it and a lot more violence that they feel they're missing with this not having a rated R. I don't think it's necessary. I can see how maybe you could throw more interesting lines in, but I also worry that it would be, then we're going to be overusing it just because we have an R rating. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
The only time I thought an R rating would have been better or would have actually told the story slightly better would have been the part at the end when he kills the guy robbing not the bank but the bodega.
Oh yeah, like just show the blood there.
because like so the bite happens and then the next scene you got Tom Hardy who's completely clean but then everything around him is splattered in blood. And so is the owner, and she's kind of like just freaked out over what just happened. That would have been kind of a hysterical scene to look at, but that's the only time I'm like, that would have been better punched up if that was possible. But otherwise, I was fine with it.
Yeah, it didn't really bother me, but I fully expect an unrated or director's cut.
I hope so, just to see what they have. Yeah,
I think you will. Final thoughts on rest of the cast. Anybody stand out? I thought Michelle Williams was a little... She's fine. I don't think her character really does a whole lot here, so it's kind of underwritten.
I did really like her boyfriend, and I did, for the most part, like the doctor guy. Not the doctor guy.
Riz Ahmed. Carlton Drake? The billionaire?
Yeah. Yeah. He was kind of, towards the end, I didn't really like him as much. I felt like he was very weak when paired with his bad guy.
Riot.
Yeah. But when he was just alone as a standalone billionaire, I was like, man, this guy really, like, I just don't like him.
I really dug how he was, you know, he didn't do what typical billionaires do where they just subtly threaten and everything else. He was very manipulative and kind of almost compassionate. And using that as a form of manipulation. I really like that.
I think it worked with, no offense, but how small he is. Like, he's a very slender guy. Yeah. So he wouldn't intimidate me by threats and by
You'd laugh at him. Okay, right. big guy. Okay, yeah. Go back to your room.
But he used techniques, like manipulation techniques, that could get to anybody. Mm-hmm. And that kind of, it was like, wow, he really knows what he's doing here.
Yeah, I thought he was a very powerful as far as like his presence on screen was great. I've always liked Riz Ahmed, especially since The Night Of. He's been fantastic. Michelle Williams, I thought she was great and very understated, but scary at the same time. Like they do very well, a very good job of hinting at the fact that she's kind of, even though that she's pissed at Eddie Brock and all this other stuff, she's more or less kind of just as bad as he is.
Yeah, in a way. And I still don't quite understand how Venom was able to attach to her and she didn't die at the end. But I guess he chooses to kill, like they choose to kill the victim, right?
Right.
So he didn't have to kill her. That's why she lived.
Right. They made a deal right there and there.
They made a deal. She made a deal with the dog.
Right.
The goo dog.
I hope the dog lived.
I don't care. I was really hoping he snacked on that dog the entire movie. I thought he was going to. I was bummed. I'm like, eat the dog. Eat it. Do it. Food. Food. Special effects, I think we kind of talked about that. I thought they were really good.
Yeah, I didn't have any issues with the special effects. To me, I didn't need it to scare me by any means, but it definitely showed a power and a presence.
How about the Riot fight? Especially, you know, we get Riot at the end. That's the super Venom that he ends up fighting. And it's trying, you know, of course, he's trying to save the world and everything. That's what these movies always end up like. How did you guys like that typical CGI villain battle that we got at the end? John, were you on board with that?
That was a little hard to read for me. It was hard to follow. I didn't know what was going on through some of it. Even the points when they were two separate bodies were hard to follow. They kind of made it. That's where I was. I feel like they made a misstep. They could have done something a little bit different. I don't know what, but they could have found a different way to tell that part of the story. The effects where like they do the bullet time. I always call it bullet time when they slow down the camera like that. But when they do the bullet time, you see the two bodies kind of separated. I thought that was neat. It was mostly just hard to read. I did like the Riot symbiote because it seemed to have more like a matte finish to him. He didn't seem so glossy and shiny where Venom did. Venom should have been more of a matte finish to him. He's supposed to be able to like slink into the shadows and completely disappear, and you can't do that when you're giving off light.
Yeah, it was different. I think it was the CGI villain. What I think is almost every CGI villain fight at the end of a movie. It was just too busy, way too busy. There's too much going on. It was hard to keep track of. And then you got the fist fight. You know, I was talking to a couple people who saw the movie, and you know, when I first saw it, I'm like, what is this fight? Tom Hardy would just level this dude. When they finally actually fight man to man, I'm like, he would just level him. And then they said, yeah, but the character isn't really that good at anything. And that's when it hit me. I'm like, you know what? That fight was fair now that I think about it, because he was an idiot. So
yeah.
Idiots would fight like that. You know, he wouldn't just pound on somebody and win. But in my head, I'm like, Tom Hardy's ripped. Mm-hmm. And this dude's like 30 pounds. So it'd be one hit.
He's the size of that small dog.
Yeah, two hits. One hitting him hitting the floor. It would be over quick. But yeah, so I guess we kind of were you on the same board with Riot, that whole battle at the end?
It was. I mean, it was a little clustered. It felt like
silly putty flying everywhere. Yeah.
But I still enjoyed it. You know, I honestly forgot about the fire until I was like, oh, shit, there's going to be fire and it's going to kill him. Because I was like, why is he telling him goodbye? Like, see ya, enjoy whatever he said to him. Like, enjoy your ride. I don't know what he said. But then I was like, oh, fire. That's right. So I actually forgot all about that because it was only mentioned once.
Well, I love how they mentioned that in the cab ride. That was such a weak writer's point.
Yeah.
Here, I'm the villain. Let me tell this lady everything that'll kill me. Here you go. This will do it. Noises and, oh, yeah, fire. Fire's bad. Don't like that.
Uh-huh.
Just so you know, for the future, for the ending.
Yeah.
People that are listening.
Yeah.
So random. All right. Last thing with Venom, I think we've covered most of it, but do you want more villains from Spider-Man's world? John, you seem to be hung up on this the most. What do you think? Do you want like the Sinister Six? They talked about doing a Sinister Six movie. Jenny.
The jury is still out for me.
Really?
Like, as much as this was great, the thing about it is that it's still Venom, and Venom's an anti-hero, I guess, in the Marvel universe now. I don't know the Sinister Six. Do I need to see villains running around doing things and finding an excuse to be heroes for whatever reason? Not really. I don't know. Just let them show me what they want to show me, and then I'll make a decision.
Well, I don't know all of the villains in the world, but I know that there are some fans of Spider-Man that are big on Sinister Six. So I feel like if they could bring that to reality for people, if they could bring that to reality for people and do it well, do it justice, then I'm all for it. I'm not opposed to more of the Spider-Man world coming to life at all. I just want to make sure it's done right.
You can't, to me, in my world, you can't do Sinister Six without Spider-Man present. You just can't. Right. Because so many of those characters are directly related to Peter Parker. Mm-hmm. Doc Ock is directly connected to Peter Parker. You've got just half of the characters are directly connected. So if you had that movie, I could see like a Spider-Man movie or even a two-part movie where it's like Sinister Six. They build them to the end of the first movie and then he fights them throughout the second movie. I could see that.
Mm-hmm.
But I could not see a standalone. Yeah, mm-hmm. I could see more Venom movies. I'm cool with that. But definitely not Sinister Six.
Okay.
Maybe you could do, how was it, The Hunter? Who's The Hunter?
Kraven.
Kraven. They could do a Kraven movie, Kraven the Hunter. I think they are talking about doing that one. I would watch that because that's a cool character. And Amanda's actually going to leave us now. So
bye.
Okay, John, closing thought, favorite moment. Pick a moment, your favorite moment of the movie.
Sitting on the stoop. Talking about having that interview, and all of a sudden you hear Venom out of nowhere say, "She totally doesn't know we're going to get her back."
You really loved that, didn't you?
Yeah, that was a nice surprise. It was they held on to that just long enough to like make you go, "Yeah, he's probably gone," but nope, he's still there.
Mine was the motorcycle chase because I've always dug the character of Venom. I didn't love like how he was represented in comics necessarily all the time, but I really love a game called Prototype, which is very much like Venom if he's a good guy. So the whole thing was kind of like watching all of those things come together, and it just was so inventive, and it really reminded me of Ant-Man in that respect. It just felt so creative and inventive, and it was fun seeing how he was going to get out of this one. And even though the special effects weren't always perfect, they were really good. And there's a moment where the motorcycle it's trying to go through two, I think it was like two cars or two vans, and it gets between them and then splits them up so the motorcycle can come through. I love that moment. I thought that was just such a giddy, I was a giddy little fan at that moment.
Yeah, that moment was pretty fun. How did you feel about the post-credit scene?
Oh, the stinger. Yeah. Okay, well, Cletus, if you don't know, becomes Carnage. Carnage is like a super duper version of Venom.
Yeah, it's a spawn of Venom.
I like that. I think it's cool that they're going to bring Carnage into the universe. Woody Harrelson, I have no problem with Woody Harrelson. He's a great actor. I mean, he can do a lot of crazy things. And if you want bonkers, then I want to see him play off Tom Hardy. I think that would be a freaking blast. The wig sucked. Was awful. Absolutely abysmal. I'm like, why are you wearing Little Orphan Annie's hair? What is going on? So no,
he killed her and he's wearing it.
Obviously, but I don't like that. That's the only thing I think would have to go. You have to show Woody Harrelson sans hair. What about you?
I was okay with the wig. I was in a weird spot because I felt like showing Carnage that soon was a little bit tipping the hand, or at least showing the fact that they're going to do Cletus that soon was a little bit showing their hand too soon. But at the same time, it's exciting. I am interested to see if they take that, because I don't know how they're going to do, how they're going to do something with, like, to me, that's how they bring Spider-Man in, because it takes Venom and Spider-Man to take down Cletus.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see what they do. And I'm looking forward to more movies, man. I really want to see more Venoms. Maybe a Kraven and maybe a couple others. Just maybe a Lizard movie. I'd watch that, because that Doctor's, you know, fun to watch. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. And I hope you guys enjoyed this. Kind of curious. You want to share your thoughts? Tell us what you thought of Venom. It'd be kind of cool. Do you guys want to see more movies? Are you on board that this was a fun flick? Are you with the critics, the nasty critics, didn't like the movie? You know, where do you land? As we take it out, remember, see Venom in a theater, buy some popcorn, but also, John, this is where I want you to come in and finish this off. In life, just don't be a
pussy.
Nice. We're connected. We're symbiotic. I love it. Take care, guys.
We will eat both your arms and then both of your legs, and then we will eat your face right off your head. You will be this armless, legless, faceless thing, won't you? Rolling down the street like a turd in the wind.
What the hell are you?
We are Venom.
Oh, I have a parasite. Yeah. Name is Chen.